All right, the bell is rung. It's time for us to get started. We're glad to see everyone out this morning. Have a gap morning. We have visitors and glad to see you here. Welcome you to our class. We are in 2 Samuel, in chapters 9 and 10 this morning. Fourth quarter of our three-year cycle. Went through the narrative of the Bible. And we started back in 1 Kings when this is why I say give us a king, 1 Samuel chapter 8, and we have moved forward through Samuel and David up until now. So let's look at chapters 9 and 10 this morning, and David's going to show some kindness to Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son, and then we got three battles with the Ammonites and the Syrians we talked about this morning. A couple of lessons that might spring forth from this. We'll talk about those as we go through there. First, we got this slide that I put in here. I got stumbled across a couple of these points Wednesday night, and I shouldn't have done that. But it also fits in with our class this morning. Looking at Saul's sons, Saul's children, not his son. Jonathan, of course, we know about, probably the more famous of his sons. Best friends with David. And then Jonathan has a son, Mephibosheth. That's who we'll get into this morning. Ishbosheth was also his son. Abinadab, Michael, was his daughter that married to David. So think about the children of Saul. And come down then to Mephibosheth, which is Jonathan's son. And we'll be talking about him this morning. Good in our class. A couple of cities and things, areas that we're looking at on the map this morning. The first one is, you already see it on there, it's Lo-Debar. It's a little town that is just below the Sea of Galilee and just to the east of the Jordan River, right in there. That's the hometown of Mephibosheth. That's when David sends for him. That's where he is. And so we'll see that city comes in. And then these three here, Tob and Micah and Zobah, are Syrian-related countries that will come to the rescue of the Ammonites when they get into the battle with David and Joab and his army. So keep those, we've got another map. We'll look a little later on about that. So keep those spots in mind as we start through the class this morning. Oh, I have one more up there. Down in there is Ammon. That's the capital, Reba Ammon. And that's where David and these battles are going to take place there. So the Ammonites are down there. We'll get to that in a minute. All right, let's go back and back up a little bit and get a little running start here. Flip back to your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 5. And what are a couple of key events you see in chapter 5? Let's look through there and see what jumps out at you on chapter 5. Most of you got little page dividers in there, or chapter dividers. What's in chapter 5? Conflict with the Philistines, start with. What else? Conquest of Jerusalem, okay. So David's that. So, before he captures Jerusalem, remember David's been king just the Judah part for 7.5 years. Ishbosheth's been reigning up in the northern part, Saul's son. And Ishbosheth made Abner mad because he accused him of going into one of his concubines. And so Abner delivers all the nation to David. So David then, now key over all that, and then he captures Jerusalem, and then David's king, what's he got to have? Needs a palace, so his friend Hiram from Tyre brings the cedars and the laborers out and builds David a palace. And all that's in chapter 5. What's in chapter 6? What? Yeah, brother the archer to Jerusalem, okay. At the time that it failed, and they go back and then consult God about the proper way to do it. So he goes back again and brings it in. Now the ark's in Jerusalem. So David's captured Jerusalem. He's king over all of Judah and Israel combined. He got a palace built by Hiram, and the ark's there now. So things are going. 7, boy. Yeah, this is a big chapter we spend a lot of time on with the prophecy about the kingdom lasting forever. So David's got a big palace. Everything's set up for him. He wants to build God a house. And God says, no, I'm going to build you a house. And does it through Solomon and his descendants. So that's chapter 7. Spent a lot of time talking about the kingdom and the different terms of the word forever and things like that. And what happened to chapter 8 then? Yeah, for all the wars. He goes out to war and he secures, expands his borders, captures the territory all around him. We said David's area went from Solomon's was like maybe 6,000 square miles. David's went to 60,000 square miles, perhaps. So he really expands the borders of his kingdom. So that kind of brings us up to where we are now. So how are things going overall for David now? Absolutely great. Okay. In chapters 9 and 10, David is at the height of his kingdom. Absolutely the top of his kingdom. It will never be better for him. In fact, we're going to see the downfall start here just very, very shortly. He has territory. He has wealth. He has favor with God. God's well blessing him. So think about David right now. He has come through and he is at the very top of his kingdom, top of his game, we might say. So at this point here in time. So, given all that, David's sitting here in high fashion. Things are going well for him. What might be his tendency? Is it going good? Just going to sit back and relax and see how things go, right? But David's got one little piece of unfinished business he wants to deal with. And that's talked about in chapter 9, verse 1. What's he going to do? What's he looking for? He's got a promise he's made back to Jonathan. Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 20. When Saul's trying to kill David, and Jonathan's kind of doing the go-between between the two of them, and I'll warn you if my father's going to kill you, and if his father said, well, why are you trying to kill David? What's he done to him? We talked about all that and went through there. And Jonathan said, make me a promise that you will show kindness to my house forever. Do not cut off that kindness. So David wants to do something about that. So we look at chapter 9, verse 1. We see David ready to try to take care of fulfilling that promise. Now, he's going to do it through Mephibosheth. We saw Mephibosheth back in 2 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 4. It's got a little inserted verse in there. It doesn't really seem like it falls exactly with the story there. That's where Abner has been killed by Joab. But it talks about when the news came of Saul and his sons being killed on Mount Gilboa. At the battle there, and the news comes in, and the nurse picks up young Mephibosheth and is fleeing with him. He falls and becomes crippled in both his feet. That's the same one we're talking about now. So that's who they find that's available for David to show kindness to, which would be right in line with what David liked to do because it's Jonathan's son. That was his best friend. Loved him like a brother. So he sends for Mephibosheth. He talks to Ziba, the servant of Saul. Tell Ziba, you and your family will till the land and you'll make the goods to provide for Mephibosheth's family. But what's he going to do with Mephibosheth himself? What does he get? He sits at the king's table. Think back under Saul. Who had sat at Saul's table? David had. Okay, remember the time when the seat was absent and the questions came up about where's David because his seat was absent? Was David then was a son-in-law to the king, which might account for that. But Mephibosheth gets this very, very high honor of being seated at the king's table. Ziba, you go take care of all the territory. I restore the territory of Saul to Mephibosheth's family. You go take care of it. You and your, 15 sons and 20 servants, I think it was. As for Mephibosheth, he'll live here in Jerusalem. He'll eat at my table forever. And so that was a extremely high honor that he gave to Mephibosheth here, who was his best friend Jonathan's son. And he's fulfilling that promise he made back in 1 Samuel chapter 20. So that's kind of what chapter 9 is about. It's David's promise to Jonathan being fulfilled through his kindness to Mephibosheth. Anybody got something to add to that before we've been to chapter 10 and we'll talk about? All right. Chapter 10, David is going to get into some battles. David and his armies, Joab, is the captain. And Ammon's the main one. And then they call in the ones from Aram or the Syrians, really. We're going to talk about them more than the Syrians because look at New King James or the English standard that refers to Syria. So we'll show the territory on the map here in a minute and you'll see how why it is the same territory there. But David's going to fight them in battles. It's a series of three different battles, the way it looks here. So as we get into it, start off, Nahash, who was the king of Ammon, for the Ammonites, the sons of Lot. So their brothers would be the, who's the brother to the Moabites, okay, the Moabites. So Ammonites, Moabites, brothers, and then their descendants of Lot, which is Abraham's nephews, who got the Israelites here. This whole area there, you know, is all everybody related to everybody. Somebody comes and visits east side and say, I never knew so many folks east side were related to everybody else. Well, this whole area over here is worse than that. I mean, everybody over here is kin to somebody else some way, same plight. So they're fighting here with their with Abraham's nephew Lot's descendants. So Nahash, king of the Ammonites, dies. And David sends an entourage, an envoy, a group of people over there to help console Nahash, or console his son, Haman, because of the death of Nahash. And we don't know why, except it says it was something that Nahash had done for David in the past. Some unrecorded event, apparently, that we don't know why it was, but he was moved to send his people over there to console him after his death. Look at the history of the Israelites and the Ammonites. And it's been a battle forever. And in Judges 3, goes back to Ehud. Ehud was a judge. Of course, God used the people around the Israelites during that time to come in and punish them when they would sin and forsake God. Remember all that cycle that goes within the Judges there, over and over and over. In Judges chapter 3, is Ehud's the judge. And the Ammonites are the ones coming to fight against him. Judges chapter 11, is Jephthah's the judge. Same thing there. The Ammonites are involved in battle there. And then 1 Samuel chapter 11 is where the men of Jabesh-Gilead, the Ammonites come up against them, and they have for a little time to see about getting some help. They're about to punch their right eyes out. This is Saul's first big battle. Remember what happened in 1 Samuel chapter 10? It's where Saul is publicly anointed as king. Well, this is Saul's first big battle he goes to in 1 Samuel 11 here. And that was the Ammonites again. So the Ammonites and the Israelites have battled back and forth all through this time. So it's not unknown. Here we go again with it. All right, territories. A little different map here picked up. Here's the Sea of Galilee up here, Jordan River, Dead Sea. Kind of puts in perspective, there's Jerusalem. Now, the ones we look at here, this is the kingdom of Ammon. The capital city here is Ramoth, Ammon. And that's where this battle is going to take place. Keep in mind, Jericho is going to be mentioned, the proximity here of those two, why it comes into play here. And then they call for help from I refer to them as the Syrians up here. Damascus will be the capital up here eventually of the area of Syria up here. So those are two nations to be involved here in these battles with the Israelites. So David sends these people over there to console Hanan about the death of his father. And his advisors tell him what? They're spies. Okay, now think about the whole layout here. You got a king's died, the son's taken over, time of mourning, perhaps a time of weakness in the kingdom, maybe. And so spies come in, check it out, it's a good time for a battle. So they convince him that that's what those Israelites have come for, is to spy off the land. And so he buys into it. So what did you do to them? Two things. Cuts off half their beard. I've always envisioned it being like half their beard. I don't know if it was half this way, or what they did to it. And then what else they do? Cut their skirts off at the top of their thigh areas up here. Now, that would come in nakedness, okay? They'd be exposed. We can see why that'd be a problem. What's the deal with the beards? Why is that such an insult to them? Here's the verse it goes back to. Back in Leviticus 19, verse 27, they're laying out the laws from God, the covenant here, that you shall not shave around the sides of your beard, of your head, nor shall you disfigure the edges of your beard. That was God's command to them. And so to come in and cut off half that beard would be a direct violation of this. It'd be very embarrassing. Which I'm sure would look strange too if they really did chop off one right side or left side type thing. But that was the problem. That's the two things they did to him. Shame, embarrassment, totally. So David says them to go back to Jericho. Now, why would he pick Jericho instead of sending them back to Jerusalem? Think about the mount we just looked at. You come back from Ramoth, since you cross into Israelite territory, what's the first city you're going to come to? Jericho, right? You got that long climb to go up to Jerusalem up there. So he says, stay in Jericho until your beards grow back out. You're going to be shamed here in the capital city. So they do that. But this sets up wartime. It's an insulting action that he did here to his, this peaceful envoy that was sent over. Now, if we take the text and look at it, it appears to be three different battles. So we'll go through those this morning as three separate battles that we get involved with the Israelites and either the Ammonites or the Syrians or some combination of both of them there. The first one here is the very next thing here in this chapter, right after the piece here we just talked about with the beard incident. The next verse is 6 and 14 is a battle. And then if you look right after that, it seems to be a separate battle. This is more with the Syrians than it is with the Ammonites being involved. And then we're going to jump over and get into chapters 11 and 12 a little bit for a third battle. We're not going to touch the story in between there. We'll talk about it right at the end a little bit. That's next time's class, Wednesday night. But these three different battles here involving the Israelites and these people. So here's what goes on. Campaign one, the first one. The very next verse is after the beard incident here. In 2 Samuel 10, 6 through 14. It's also paralleled over in 1 Chronicles 19. Samuel gathers up at their capital city there, Ramoth-Ammon, and they hire these Syrians to come help them. Okay, they're the next kingdom right to the north, okay? So they hand it there to get them to come down and help. So they kind of surround them and get them to don't use their binkle on one end and the Syrians on the other end and get the Israelites caught between. That's kind of the idea behind it. So, Joab and Abishai, his brother, are going to split the army up, one fight one and fight the other. Now, the verse here I want to look at in this, when Joab is talking to Abishai about the arranging for this battle. Now, don't you think about this verse? I'll hear some comments about it. He tells him in verse 10, 2 Samuel, verse 12, 2 Samuel chapter 10. Joab talking to Abishai, after he split them up, so I'm going to take the mighty man, I'm going to go fight the Syrians. You take the rest of the army, you go face the Ammonites. He said, be of good courage. Be of good courage. And let us be strong for our people, for the cities of our God, and may the Lord do what is good in His sight. Think about that verse a minute. Okay. Be of good courage. Let us be strong for our people, the cities of our God, and may the Lord do what's right in His sight. I think there's a lesson there. What is it? What do you see in that verse? Somebody, speak up. Sir? Faith in the Lord jumps out, okay? What could you do to that verse and make it kind of put it right down to us? Change just one or two words. What are we going to say? Be of good courage. Let us be strong for our people, for our congregation, perhaps, and for the church of our God. I'm not trying to chop the verse up, but you get the idea here. And may the Lord do what's good in His sight. The Lord's going to increase, okay? If we will be strong, we'll have courage, have faith. If we'll get out and determine to go to battle, be strong which means studying and knowing and preparing and teaching and doing, we'll be strong for one another, for the church, for our God, and we'll depend on the Lord then to do us good in His sight. What's going to happen? Oh, see, I've got a problem. I got a comment, thoughts about this verse. Yeah, we're not to be a fearful people. Not to be afraid. God's behind us. And we see that illustrated all through David's life here, depending on God. And all these psalms he wrote, we talked about them over and over. A lot of times he'll start out with a fearful type thing, the first part of the psalm. We had one last week. Psalm 60 started out fearful light, and then it goes to the victorious part. So it ties right in with David's thing here. This verse just kind of jumped out at me, Albert. Oh, yeah. We get surrounded all the time with problems and issues and the sin in the world and everything that happens around about us. And we just need to stop and say, look here, we got one another. We need to depend on one another. We'll all be strong together. And God's going to take care of it. We put our faith in Him. They were totally surrounded. Abishai took part of the army and went against the Ammonites. Joab the other part and went against the Syrians up here. And what happened in this battle? What was the result? Look forward there. What did they see in both cases? The Syrians saw Joab and these mighty men coming. What did they do? They turned and ran. When the Ammonites saw them run, what did they do? They ran, okay? Now, what's the rest of the lesson? Maybe we'll be strong and show some courage and depend on the Lord. What might happen to some of our problems? They might run too, reckon. That'll take care of it. Yeah. That's right. Resist the devil and he will flee. Sometimes we don't resist him enough, Randall. Submit to God, yes. Okay, so that's kind of the end of this first campaign here. With everybody fleeing and running, Joab takes the army and he goes back to Jerusalem. End of that one. So we're going to the second thing. It's in the very next verses there. There seems to be a little divide here between it. And this one seems to be more with the Syrians now. The Ammonites have called for the Syrians in the first battle to come help. And the Syrians had fled before Joab in this first little skirmish here. But this time, the Syrians, says, I need some more help. So he reaches out to the Syrians, even across the Euphrates, and he gathers up these other people to come help him, and they pull together to go fight against Joab again, against the battle. We didn't like the way the first time come out. We're going to go back and get some more help. We're going to try it again. This time, David seems to go out with him to battle, and I can't imagine the massacre. They killed 700 charioteers, drivers of chariots, and then 40,000 of these soldiers. I looked at the population of Athens last night, just out of curiosity. 24,000 in the 2010 census. 24,000 people in this whole town, man, woman, and child, according to the 2010 census. I'd like to see 40,000 bodies laid on the battlefield. I mean, that's just beyond my imagination. Kind of massacre you see in something like this. Just totally wipe them out. If that happens to the Syrians that came up against David, what do you think they're going to do now? About wave the white flag and let's make peace? This is what they did. They said, it's time to make peace. So now the Syrians have made peace with David. Yeah. how long it's going to last. Things kind of turn over here, seems like. But that was the second battle. So first one was the Ammonites, and the Syrians come to help. Everybody ran. Now the Syrians have got more help. They come in, they battle again. This time David's involved, and they kill 40,000 of them. Now the third skirmish we're going to look at here is not in 9 and 10, which is our main lesson for today, but look at the very first verse of chapter 11. The spring of the year. What's it time to do? Go out and fight. Now, stands to reason they wouldn't fight as much in the wintertime when it's cold, harder to move around, bad weather, et cetera, et cetera. So springtime's when they go out and have these wars. Now we're going to skip everything then from verse 1 all the way over to the last part of chapter 12 where this thing kind of winds up. And we'll get all that Wednesday night. We'll talk about that just in a minute. So if we go over the end of it then, we'll pick up the rest of the story. So David sends Joab out to besiege Rabbah, this capital city of Ammon. And if you jump over the last part of chapter 12 there, Joab comes in and he's got, we won't talk about what happened in between time, we'll get that later on. But Joab winds up with the whole city surrounded, besieged. So if Joab goes ahead and finishes up a battle, who's going to get credit for the win? Joab will. Being loyal to his king, David, what does Joab do? Sends back to David and says, David, everything's ready. Come over here now and take the city and take the credit for it. So David comes then to the battle. He'd go there, he would get credit for it. But David comes over to Ramah, across the Jordan, east side, Rabbah, and he's ready to capture it. So they do. They take the city. And they get great possessions. Lots of possessions. David, we talked about this in the battles in the last chapter. All these wars he would go against, David would pick up all the silver and the gold and the bronze and bring it back in and dedicate it to the Lord. And that's what's going to be used as he comes up here getting ready to build Solomon, to build his temple. All the stuff he gets here. And he gets the crown of the king. I'm not sure how much physical weight is in a talent of gold or how much dollar value is in a talent of gold. There's no doubt it's very significant. Okay. And there was a precious stone in this crown also. So David takes this crown from the king of the Ammonites, where they have destroyed their city, and places it on his head and takes that back with him. And then the next verse says that they, if you look at which version you got, the New King James says they took the people and put them to work with Saul's axes and other sharp instruments. I think the English Standard says the same thing, uses the word to put them to work. On the slide here it says they execute them. I've got a note scribbled on the edge of my Bible that says, back I guess when Bob went through this with us years ago, that if you go back to the original word there, the indication is to kill, not to work. Okay. So the translation difference between where they put them to work or where they actually killed them. And it seems to be more likely from the readings that they actually executed the people there with these saws, axes, and other sharp instruments and killed them. So that's the three battles that occurred with the Ammonites and the Syrians and related wars between them there. Not much to say about that except, you know, they happened. I don't know about it. Now, a little spare time this morning. The last slide. If you look at 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. In 2 Samuel 12, starting in verse 26. There's a gap between the two there. We just talked about going to war. We jumped over to the end of chapter 12 and looked at the results of that battle. Joab had him captured and had David come out to get the victory. But right between there is another battle going on. And this is the most important battle in David's life. And David won all these battles with the Ammonites and the Syrians. But he's going to lose this battle. And it's the battle of temptation. And this is what we get Wednesday night in our class. We'll talk about that. The battle that David has with Bathsheba is obviously the most disappointing point in his life. And even worse than that, all the comments I made earlier about in chapters 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, were building up to the ultimate top of David's kingdom. He had a very high point in his kingdom when things are going so well for him with his wealth, his territory expanded, his riches he's got, God blessing him. He's in favor with God. All's going so well for him. And at this point here, chapter 11, is where it all starts going down. So we hit the tie point. Now the kingdom from here on out is going to be going down. And it all comes about because David yielded this temptation. Without getting into Wednesday night's lesson, we'll stop there. But you know the story of David and Bathsheba. We'll get that Wednesday night. We'll look at chapter 11, chapter 12, the sin. And, of course, it ties into the battle with Uriah being sent to the front and back and forth. We'll get that Wednesday night. And then the Nathan's confronting David, David's reaction to it. What happened from there? But this is the shortest lesson we've had all quarter, I think. I never liked me to get through 7 minutes early, 8 minutes early. So somebody didn't talk enough this morning. That was me. So that is the last slide I've got this morning. Okay, somebody got some thoughts about we talked about this morning. I hate to wind up this early. I don't want to do this. Randall, go ahead, sir. Yeah, I've talked to different ones over the years. Get some preachers in some place you don't know off somewhere and ask them how things are going at the congregation, what's happening here. Says, I've had more than one tell me, well, things are going really good, but we know Satan doesn't like it. That's kind of where we are right now, right over with David. David is doing so well. Because he's dependent on God. We talked about over and over in the class that one little phrase, what did he do? David inquired of the Lord. And over he would ask God about what to do and how to handle things. And this time, David yields to this major temptation. And this goes downhill from there. Then all the consequences that come from it just take David's kingdom out to the worst. Anything else? David, even in his worst moment, is going to give us some very timely, is not the word for it, some very valuable lessons that we need to know about. What Albert's saying is, when David was confronted with his sin, what do you do about it? No excuses, no making excuses, but David admitted it. And confess to sin. We'll talk about that one tonight. Okay. He was. And even though he made a mistake, the good was still there. Right. Yeah. And we'll try to talk about a lot about that one tonight. Okay. You got about 4 or 5 minutes extra this morning. Thank you very much.